Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey guys, this is Gabby Douglas. If you have an active lifestyle like me, hydration is key. That's why I love the Hydration Watermelon Smoothie from Smoothie King. Blended with whole fruits, coconut water, and more electrolytes than some of the leading sports drinks, Hydration Watermelon is the cleaner way to hydrate with no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. So you can recover and perform at your peak ability during the summer heat. Order online or through the app for pickup or delivery. Smoothie King, rule the day.
My name is Dave Hanratty and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 75 of the No Encore Music Podcast. We have a live show on September the 28th in Whelans. If you haven't heard us mention it already, I just mentioned it there again. That's September the 28th in Whelans with Overhead the Albatross, Dahi and Elaine May. Tickets €12 on Ticketmaster right now. There's a month to go. We'll see you front row and you'll get to see me and my boys, Craig Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, hey, if I'm still alive. I mean, like, you just got me worried that I have glandular fever because I'm like a bit, I don't know. I'm concerned now, Dave.
Colm Morrigan.
I'm sharing the studio with him, so I'm only slightly less uncomfortable, really.
You have a cold.
Yeah. Are you
sure? It's not glandular fever. Okay. If it was glandular fever, you'll be able to leave your fucking bed. Trust me.
All right. Okay.
Don't make me talk about my glandular fever again.
Let's not.
The highlight of the first couple of months of 2017 for me. Great. Just stop kissing people. You know, that's...
Okay.
That's all you got to do.
I'll try my best.
That's all you got to do. Okay. So, we've discovered to our horror in the previous few minutes that our sonic architect, Eve, who is back with us this week. Hello, Eve. Hi. How's it going?
Hi.
She somehow has no idea, had no idea, that Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather is the thing.
Yeah.
Which is happening, you know, imminently.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Complete with questions like, hang on, there's boxing. And yeah. I thought he was not a boxer.
Yeah,
I'm
so
really impressed.
Did we.
No, I'm genuinely impressed because it's like, how could you possibly have such a blackout on social media and like even just like, everyone just rabbiting on about it as they have been so hard for the last kind of month or two?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing
to not know about.
To not know about it. Yeah,
true,
I wish I was that person.
So, what are our plans for the big fight?
I think I'm going to be in Kilcock.
Why?
Is that a real place?
Yeah, apparently.
What?
I don't know. It's where you go, isn't it?
What are you talking about?
I'm going to be in Kilcock watching the fight.
Is that a euphemism?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I've got a fever.
Not one that I'm familiar with.
I'm going to...
Maybe they're all talking about it and we've missed this.
I'm going to yours, am I?
No, we're both going to someone else's now.
Oh, okay, right, okay. Yeah. I go where I'm told.
We're changing it up.
Also, Craig, you don't have a fever.
Okay.
Smash cut to next week when Craig's not in.
I know, I'm very concerned now. I'm also amazed that you're drinking out of a Russell Watson mug,
It
Dave.
Was all that was in the kitchen.
The people's
Why?
Tenor.
I didn't even know who that is. Who is it?
He's a tenor.
Okay.
He's the people's tenor.
Right.
He's a singer.
I wanted the black Thoman mug and it was looking like someone had just used it.
Oh, okay.
So
It's very colourful. It's good.
Bringing you right behind the scenes of No Encore here,
as I have my lukewarm tap water because I forgot to go to the shop. Uh-huh. So, yeah, how do we all feel about this world stage of horrible avarice and two arrogant fucking egomaniac pricks conning everyone out of their money? Can you imagine even putting money down in this fight? What kind of a clown would you be?
I mean,
come to the live show, though, listener, if you're not offended by what I just said.
In America, it costs like $100 to buy this fight, which is...
In
mental.
HD, you can get it for $89.99 in non-HD.
It's true, yeah.
Go the extra.
Why would you even need HD for this?
Like, HD is the future, my friend.
Is it
by
really?
Future, I mean the present.
Too much high definition on TV, I think. No?
Well, we see too much too
of
good,
people. Yeah, we see too much of people. Like what they actually look like.
This can be a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. You can get up close and personal to, like, you know, I don't know, Sir Davos.
No offense, Liam Cunningham.
I'm a huge fan.
Liam Cunningham's looking well. Like,
he is looking well.
I will always remember being in a bar one of the first times I've ever come across HD TV and the football was on.
What a day.
The football was on. We were like... That is impressive, to be fair. It's a very sharp picture. And then it goes back to studio where Bill O'Hurley, John Giles and Eamon Dunphy crevasse of their faces blown up in like big screen high definition. It's not a great look.
Look at you throwing a dead man under the bus. And a dead institution as well. He was a great
dead institution.
Yeah, like the Irish language.
Like the Magdalene Laundries.
Oh no 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 no.
Speaking of Irish institutions, like, have we seen this ad, this Beats by Dre ad, where it's like Conor McGregor's growing up in the like hard streets of Crumlin?
No,
it's
I haven't
awful.
Watched it yet.
I've avoided it because I've seen way too many people being like, I'm so proud to be Irish by watching this video. And I was like, you know what I don't want to do?
Yeah, you'd swear he'd like grown up on the streets of Compton.
But you read like the fucking ESPN piece by Roy Thompson where he was like, it's like the pages of a Dennis Lehane novel come to life. Yeah. And I was like, when is, you know, Way Down in the Hole by the Blind Boys of Alabama going to kick in as I scroll down through this article?
Yeah, it's very much like that.
So, if you've never lived in Crumlin, you've survived it. So, fair play to everyone who lives in Crumlin and is thus surviving it.
Or just passed through, it seems.
It's a lovely spot. It's grand.
It's grand. It's got character. That's where my dentist is. My aforementioned steampunk dentist. That's out in Crumlin. Shout out to George Miller. You got teeth problems? Go to George. Learn a lot.
We'll be back after that message.
We have a brand new segment this week. We've had Craig on Kanye in the past, but this week, it's time for Craig on Jay-Z.
We're not making
I didn't record. I didn't have time for a sting for this. No, I spent all my time doing the Taylor Swift images. Got nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is Craig on Jay-Z on Kanye. So, I mean, when Jay-Z released his most recent album, 444, we talked a lot and I had kind of a bit of a moment. I had a bit of a... What did I have?
You had a rant.
I was feverish even then. It
was like my 11-minute Harry Styles rant.
It really was. It might have been somewhat coloured by the fact that he laid in quite hard on Pharrell Kanye in a number of lines, and it seemed like the kind of squabble between them was just worsening. But Jay-Z's given a new interview and he's kind of explained himself and the kind of, he's talked about this alleged beef with Kanye and plenty of other stuff. In response to speculation, he was taking shots at Kanye on the opening track, Kill Jay-Z, and actually a couple of other tracks as well. There's very kind of obvious stuff that people haven't been mentioning. But Jay has explained that it's not even about a Kanye diss. It's not a diss. I'm talking to myself the whole time. He continues, I'm not talking about Kanye when I say you dropped out of school, you lost your principles. I'm talking about me.
Well,
you don't sound convinced.
No, I'm not.
I mean, it does apply to both, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, he goes on to talk about famous onstage rant Kanye had.
He doesn't walk it back. This is the weird thing.
Yeah, he doesn't really at all. And he's kind of trying to switch up the narrative where, like, he's talked about, oh, Kanye was coming after my wife and kids.
You brought my family into it, that old chestnut.
Like, Kanye wasn't dissing. I don't know. He did say anything about his kids, I don't think. He said Beyonce said she would only perform at an award ceremony if she won the award, which I think deserved calling out, right? Right? Am I right?
They come after us next. Yeah, I don't see it all seems very, very innocuous. I'm not saying it's staged or anything, but like it's very kind of storm in a teacup stuff, really.
Well, yeah, but plus as well, it's also clearly PR managed where like his guys have sat down and basically with a fine-tooth comb gone through the various... controversies arising from the album, because he's also had to talk about, like, you know, his supposed anti-Semitism in what was it called, Story of OJ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
you know, he's obviously had to talk about the whole Solange situation.
Which I love, by the way. People were like, hey, what do you think about people that gag that went around? People were like, that elevator that night, that, you know, birthed three great albums. And his response is, I think we went into that elevator as great artists. Doesn't surprise me. End of quote.
But like, this is like political communication at its best. Like, it's verbal jujitsu, just turning the sort of loose narrative into something that suits him.
Yeah.
Good work, Jay.
I mean, like, the anti-Semitic stuff, let's wade into that for a second.
Oh, yeah.
No, but his argument is kind of like, well, I say stuff about African-Americans as well, and you haven't mentioned that. It's like, oh. And then he kind of says, well, I'm saying something positive. And you're like, oh.
Jay. I think his thing is that it's all a bit of an exaggerated caricature.
It is. He says it's an exaggeration. So, yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing at all times.
The quote, though, as well, when he goes, of course I know Jewish people don't own all the property in the world. I mean, I own things.
Laughs.
And then he goes, it was an exaggeration, much like that racist cartoon.
Oh, great. I'm glad you cleared that up.
Good sighting
but,
there.
But, you know, not the worst album he's ever put out.
It's a good album.
It's a good album. Form.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Like, you're determined to keep it off our year-end honours list.
It's fine.
Stage.
It's fine.
Less heading towards the New Year's honours list, I think, is probably going to be the LCD Sound System album, or at least from what we've had to judge it from so far. Three singles in, and we're kind of skeptical, but James Murphy has been talking about the record, which he calls a completely new phase for the band, which I guess was kind of obvious anyway, right?
Yeah, it's called, you know, retirement.
Yeah.
Active retirement.
And he even talked about when they went into retirement, finishing up with that Madison Square Garden show, and he said that basically the promoters had no faith in their ability to sell tickets, suggested that Outkast's Big Boy open for them, and that he had the theory that if we make it our last show, it'll sell out.
The story's full of holes. Why the fuck would Madison Square Garden be like, we don't think he can sell Madison Square Garden, but can you play next Friday? Like, yeah. Don't book it. It's 18,000 people. If you think like they're not a draw, what are you doing?
Oh, I mean, I guess there were nerves.
Well, he basically said, yeah, you know, we said we'd retire so those tickets would sell.
Yeah.
Incidentally, this is the last ever episode of No Encore until the live show. And if you want to come to the thanks. Appreciate
very well
that.
Done.
Yeah, off the
very
cuff,
well
off
done.
The cuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of his bandmates has kind of come out and said, well, it's not all that calculating. It was more of a kind of, I mean, James Murphy says himself, it was a bit of a lark. It wasn't thought through. We thought just like, okay, we'll probably call it quits after this. It'll be a big kind of send-off and everyone will come. But it is a bit cynical.
His bandmate, Al Doyle, multi-instrumentalist, has gone on a tweet storm, although, you know, it's not too visceral. He basically just kind of says, no.
Just tweet squall.
Yeah, pretty much. He says music journalism is out there to kind of get clicks and, you know, find angles, and it's a great angle. If someone comes along and says, we only broke up to sell tickets, fair enough, I understand that. But he was like, why would that be a motivation? Like, I mean, like the show lost a lot of money. We didn't make any money on that show. And he said, we're talking about people's professional livelihoods. It was my job and it ended. I didn't think I was getting it back. He said, I'm glad we got back together. I understand the obsession with the why that hangs over the retirement, but even for me, it's not been fully answered, and I don't necessarily need it to be, but I do want you all to know that it wasn't to grub ticket money. So that makes it sound like James Murphy is not a great communicator with his acts and or his bandmates, and they're just happy to be there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very much so.
Although he does give credit to aforementioned good communicator Jay-Z, and indeed that track, The Song of OJ, he mentions in this interview that it's one of the tracks recently that's gotten him really excited.
It's a very good song.
He called it fucking beautiful. So, praise indeed.
I don't know. There's also reference to Morrissey, who incidentally has announced a new record.
Oh. Yeah, are we excited?
No. Not after that gig.
Yeah.
Not after that gig.
I mean, it's getting harder and harder to kind of, you know, make excuses for Morrissey as a kind of public figure as well.
Oh,
so,
big time.
And it's very hard to kind of separate his music as well. So.
That was the gig that caused me to quit my Hot Press job. Let's not forget.
Well.
It was also the gig that caused a lot of people to stop going to that burger place outside Three Arena.
Yeah, to be fair. Probably a wise choice for all involved. Yeah. But nonetheless, these days, you know, we've seen that horrific scenes in the United States of America when that Robert E. Lee statue was going to be taken down. And
yeah.
Some absolutely disgusting fucking slugs came out of the woodwork to protest that. Mm. In a change for good, hopefully, someone has petitioned for a Missy Elliott statue. And I kind of say, why not?
Sure, I mean,
it would be a hell of a thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it very much would. And Mayor John Rowe has come out and he says, "I say yes and ask you to join me in letting us work it. Together we can put white supremacy down, flip it and reverse it."
There you go. Give that man yes. another term.
Erect that statue right now. And everybody loves Missy. She doesn't get enough props, I think. So yes, a statue for Missy Elliott.
Yeah,
please.
She's oddly underrated. And also, I like when there's like, you know, kind of a pop culture statue to, you know, signify an area. For example, that Robocop statue in Detroit, which I believe is finally a thing.
Yeah,
it's about damn time. If anyone's going to save a collapsed industrial city, it's a statue of Robocop.
I also noticed that Killer Mike is amongst those speaking out about, you know, the statue of Confederate heroes and presumably in support of the Missy Elliott. Did frighten me for a second there where I thought they were suggesting a Killer Mike statue, at which point half the quarries in the US would be put out of business.
Don't body shame the man. Yeah. He wears his carriage very well, I'll have you know.
Lord.
What? Is that a thing?
First class carriage.
He's a large man with a lot to say.
Just as a strange aside there, ESPN have a commentator called Robert Lee who's been taken off commentating on a Virginia match this weekend.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I swear to God.
Because that's his name?
Yeah, because that's his name. As though people are going to get him confused or something, I don't know.
He's back from the dead and he's going to incite a riot by commentating on a sports game. Yep. Okay, fine. So, yeah, the next story in the list, I mean, like, it's a bit of a classic song. Like, you know, it's a classic song. I feel like everyone out there knows that this song in particular is a work of art, maybe? So let's have a quick listen. That's just what the doctor ordered
there.
I
can't believe you did that. That's a beautiful song destroyed.
That's Eleanor Rigby by Godhead. Early
Twilight.
Band Wings could have been.
Early 2000s new metal sensations Godhead, who were signed to Marilyn Manson's record label and then dropped, and then I don't think he signed anybody else to that label.
No.
I think it was called Post Human, maybe? But that's a banger, and I quite like it.
Are we going to get Disturbed Sound of Silence in a minute?
No.
No.
Okay. Let's not go nuts.
Well, why are we playing that, Dave?
Well, because you're a Beatles fan.
Mm-hmm.
Cullum, you're a Beatles fan.
Yeah.
Well, you gentlemen have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. If you'd like to carry your obsession with the Beatles into the next life, into the nether realm, the deeds for the grave of Eleanor Rigby, the woman whose name was immortalised in Godhead's song just there, their original track, are now for auction. The certificate of purchase and receipt of grave space will grant the owner burial rights for up to 99 years and will be sold along with a miniature Bible with Rigby's name written inside. The grave is located in Woolton, Liverpool, in St. Peter's Churchyard, the spot where Paul McCartney and John Lennon first met. So, not creepy at all.
I was very confused by this because I didn't realise you could just decide, like, spend money and decide your coffin is going to be plonked on top of someone else's.
Yeah.
What? I mean, I know there's only a kind of finite amount of space, but that seems a bit grim, doesn't it? The old residents just get shoved lower and lower down?
Residents? Residents?
Craig is optimistic, isn't he?
Yeah. Craig's going to rent rather than buy because it's only a temporary arrangement.
They all get out at night, don't they?
We're like a tenant.
Bank of Ireland probably won't give you a great deal even after you're a corpse. So
well, yeah, apparently after like 75 years or something, it goes back up for sale.
Sure.
I don't
think after 75 years you're going to be worried about that, really.
I know.
Worried about having all of your teeth left.
Just burn me, lads.
The deeds are expected to sell... The deeds are expected to sell for between £2,000 and £4,000, which isn't that bad. Other items listed include the original score for Eleanor Rigby, as well as a pair of John Lennon's glasses. Now, I misread this, and I thought they were all coming as part of a package deal.
like this extraordinary Beatles kit.
Yes.
That you could be buried
with all of it.
John Lennon's glasses.
While clutching the original score for Eleanor Rigby in your dying...
And then lie on top of Eleanor Rigby.
In your dying talon, yeah. I thought it was like a grab bag of Beatles paraphernalia. For the ultimate fan.
Yeah, no. But frankly, his glasses would go for a heck of a lot more than 2,000 to 4,000 anyway.
The thing is, like, Paul McCartney himself has said that, like, that it's just a coincidence. He said, oh, maybe something subconscious was going on. But he says that about everything.
But, like, clearly it was, like, because he said, oh, no, it was a name I plucked from thin air. And then they realised that, like, the same place that he and Lennon met. met, there was a woman called Eleanor Rigby.
Is he just going around reading like headstones? And there was about five people already in this. This is getting overcrowded.
Also, who the fuck
way?
Meets in a graveyard?
I think they met outside, like the graveyard's outside the church.
Godhead?
And they met outside the church. Probably, at some sort of community thingy that both of their parents were at.
Well, look, the point is, all items, if you're interested, go for auction on September the 11th. Never forget. Songs of the week now.
No, hang on.
Oh.
Following on from this.
Wait a second.
Yes. Yeah. I got my thinking cap and my investigative cape on. I don't know. Yeah. I put two hats on, like that guy that used to be in Goalie looking chain.
Is that fur-lined, that cape?
Well, it could be.
Okay.
And checked out some of the weirder things that have gone on auction over the years.
Excellent.
From musicians. So
wait, hang on. This sounds suspiciously to me like it could be a top 10.
It's a top 10.
Oh, wow. Eve, can you please do the honours and give us some jaunty, upbeat top 10 music? Thank you.
Oh, there we go. It's good to be back. So number 10, like, you don't even get into the specifics, but just people buying hair. Stop that. Everybody's hair seems to have been bought at auction.
Yeah.
It's not cool. A weirder part of somebody, and indeed the aforementioned John Lennon, his extracted tooth went up for sale at an auction in 2011. Yeah, he'd given the tooth. He'd actually gotten it from the dentist and given it to his housekeeper as a present, like, suggesting she give it to her Beatles fan daughter. And instead she put it up for auction.
What a dick.
And it's sold to a dentist in Canada. So, you know, what goes around comes around, I guess.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Number 8, William Shatner, kind of along the same lines, sold his extracted kidney stone.
That's a very Shatner thing to do.
He got 25 grand for it, and it was bought by GoldenPalace.com, who have a lot of previous in this. They also bought a grilled cheese sandwich with the face of the Virgin Mary on it, the Pope's old Volkswagen Golf, and paid £65,000 to name a newly found monkey, which is now the GoldenPalace.com monkey.
It didn't even go imaginative.
Is this a species of monkey, or is it just a random monkey that was found?
Oh, yeah, like a species.
Oh, right.
Yeah, kind of new thing. They also, at number 7, spent $5,000 on one of Britney Spears' used pregnancy tests. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
God, I know. Almighty.
Can you think of a worse invasion of privacy?
No, like, I don't want to. They should be arrested.
How was that even found?
It was in her hotel room in Las Vegas, I think.
All right.
And then, it was sold to a radio station in Ottawa, in Canada. And then they put it up for auction, and GoldenPalace.com bought it, because of course they did.
Stop advertising GoldenPalace.com.
Cullum's not reading this off the phone. He's just very familiar with the details of the
GoldenPalace.com. Yeah.
2000, Justin Timberlake had breakfast at a New York radio station, and they put his half-eaten French toast up for sale, and it sold for over $1,000.
They should all be fired. That's wrong. That's harassment. Harassment of
it's
breakfast.
A good thing radio
it gets
dying
worse,
on its
man.
Earth.
Niall Horan had one in Australia, and I think like it was in tens of thousands when it was sold. It did have a smear of Vegemite on it. I don't know if that helps.
Jesus Christ. There's half a sandwich here if anyone wants to bid on it.
Maybe post-live show.
I'm going to finish it, though.
Yeah. Number 5, and frankly, this isn't going to work very well on radio, but just go online and look at some of the shit that Michael Jackson was selling from his Neverland Ranch.
Oh, be careful with that Google.
Extraordinary. There's one of them. It's a life-size cowboy child holding a distressed-looking
careful
teddy
with that
bear.
Google. Careful with that Google.
Yeah, absolutely awful. Number 4, Justin Bieber had a baby boa constrictor at the MTV Music Awards.
Careful with that Google.
And I must say, I like this one, okay? Because one animal lover was horrified, and when Justin Bieber put it up for auction, he bought it and just gave it to a zoo.
Oh, okay.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Into prison with you.
Yeah. Number 3, one of those famous ones, I guess, that people reference, the Titanic's bandmaster, William Wallace Hartley, was literally playing the violin when the ship went down, and it sold a few years ago for $1.7 million.
The violin?
Yeah.
It wasn't warped by the water?
Apparently not.
I don't know, mate.
Not completely. To be honest, I don't think it was bought to be played either. Yeah. And like, as people just pass it around a room at sessions.
Give us a bit of Come On Eileen there, would you?
At number 2, Obi Trice, real name, no gimmicks. He tried to sell Eminem's old couch that he'd presumably like gifted him at some point. And he insisted that it was a joke, but it still didn't reach.
Classic
like,
Obi.
It didn't reach $2,000, which is his reserve. And then he also lamented that it went the wrong way, quote unquote, and the people assumed he was broke. That's Obie Trice, considering the only two albums he's released in the past decade peaked at like numbers 113 and 110, respectively.
He's still sleeping on that couch.
Try to again sell that couch.
There's still time.
Is it a fold-out?
And number one is Paul Yates, who's an indie movie director in New York, offered up a jar purported to contain Moby's soul. This was after every single track on Play had been licensed for ads of one type or another. And Moby had also distanced himself from a movie that he made with him called Moby Presents Alien Sex Party. It sold for $41, but they've since become friends again, so all ends well.
Sounds like Bart and Milhouse and Simpsons. Did he give him back his soul?
I don't think he gave it back to him. It's still in a jar on someone's counter somewhere.
Good lord.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's probably going to be the next album, presumably Moby Searches for His Soul.
Well, you know, hopefully he finds it. I don't know. Play's all right, I guess. He got the odd good song. Shot in the Back of the Head's great.
Oh, amazing.
Great song.
Some great song.
Great song. Well, songs are, in fact, the order of the day. Songs of the week. We only have four this week, guys. Mm-hmm. Well, we kind of have five. We'll see. But here's what we're going to do. That sound.
Shit. We're going back to bingo.
I was just doing the sound.
All right.
Here's the first song. It's by the Foo Fighters. That's The Sky Is a Neighborhood, and I saw someone on Twitter today say, "What a chorus!" I agree, it's fucking terrible.
I mean, it's not terrible, to be fair. I feel like it's just a Foo Fighters song, isn't it? It's kind of like...
It's so much more.
Loud, and it's...
Take it away,
Craig. Sing-along-y, and kind of like, you know, has ideas, at least, of being kind of monumental and epic and all the rest of it.
There was something about, I think, primarily the vocals... kind of extremely loud compared to what was going on underneath and sounded like it was recorded, like overheard as Dave Grohl was in his garage. 30 seconds in, I was in fits of laughter. It's got a weird bombastic, like, operatic by way of US alt-rock thing that My Chemical Romance might have done a decade ago, but it doesn't fit them whatsoever.
You know, it also has some sort of, like, is that a harpsichord or something in the chorus?
Yeah,
some sort of
very
baroque,
like,
string.
Yeah, it's like they're ascending to heaven. This
song can be summed up solely by a guy just going, really makes you think, man.
Yeah.
Because you know they're definitely trying to be kind of deep and philosophical with this.
I think Dave has kind of covered Paul McCartney's or Wings' Band on the Run a bit too much, because it's very McCartney in the 70s, I think. Just kind of a bit playful, but also like delusions of grandeur and no taste whatsoever.
It's like a Biffy Clyro song. It just has that weird kind of, you know, divine ascension in the middle of it, like mountains, which I still maintain has to be the theme music off some Bible channel somewhere. I can't get excited about this band because I don't find them exciting, and I hope that they would occasionally come out with something good, but I think I'd just have to cut my losses with this band and just accept them for the beige mediocrity that they are.
I think they have come out with some decent stuff in the past, but unfortunately, is this a second or third track from this
second,
album?
Second, I believe.
Yeah, well, either way, they're 0-2 now, so.
I mean, they're trying something different for sure on this, but it's just like they're out of any good ideas. Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Seems fair.
But definitely back with a new idea is... William Patrick Corgan. Love is what you want for me. Fall across the middle, the world survives. Look outside, the air's alive. Call it ether elemental. Nights, one match had to fly, one little laugh to light up.
This Corgan of whom you speak, Dave.
Yes, I will answer any and all questions about William Patrick Corgan.
Rings a bell.
It should.
Yeah.
It should ring a bell, because what Billy Corgan of Smashing Pumpkins fame has done here is he's stolen my idea. I've said before, maybe not to you guys, but it's confession time.
Do you want to be
wrote a novel?
Correct.
Okay.
If I ever like release a book or like, you know, some great masterwork that isn't the podcast,
be as David William Hanratty.
If I was to direct a film, I want to see like written and directed by David William Hanratty. I want to put out a book with David William
Hanratty. It has to be full name. It can't be initials. Like
I was going to say, if you become
it can't be initials.
No, it's only initials if he becomes a cricketer in 1890s England, where he'll be W.D. Hanratty.
DW is kind of
no, it's not though, because DW Griffith made that fucking racist Birth of a Nation movie back in the day.
And yeah. I don't think
all future DWs.
Look, you're going a bit like ESPN fucking banning Robert Lee here. Like.
DW Henry sounds like an oil man.
You could reclaim it though. Reclaim it from oil and racism.
Yeah, I'm only half joking about this thing. Like I know it's pretentious as all hell. But I think
it is your name. I think David William you want with it.
I think David William Henry has a nice ring to it. As for William Patrick Corgan, what's Billy Corgan playing at now? I mean, like, he's putting out a new record that's produced with Rick Rubin.
Rick Rubin, uh-huh. Yeah.
This song is called Aeronaut, by the way.
How do we pronounce the album?
Oh, God. Best of luck to you.
Yeah, sorry. It's Ogilala.
Sure.
Ogilala.
Why not?
Ogilala. It's kind of like a Snoop album.
So it's kind of a reinvention for the man. Yet another reinvention. And to be fair, you know, like, if you've written some of the albums he's written back in the day and some of the songs he's written, he's entitled to do whatever he wants, really. And I guess when he's not trying to buy a wrestling promotion, he's doing this. And he seems very happy about this. He seems very kind of like, he said before that he's guilty of overwriting, he's guilty of putting on way too many things, and in this situation he wants to just keep it as simple as possible, speak from the heart. Has he been successful?
I mean, you know, frankly, if he's trying to keep it pretty simple and speak from the heart, then you'd have to say, yeah, he kind of has been. Now, whether that's actually particularly good or not is open to debate.
Yeah.
I thought this was okay.
It's grand, yeah. I mean, this is very Lennon in the 70s to me with that piano. And, like, the sparser the better, I think, with Corgan at this point, maybe. Like, he's released a solo album before, like, over a decade ago, but it was all kind of synthy and a bit...
Well, yeah,
this seems like this is very more...
Well, true, but at the same time, I mean, like what are we talking, Billy Corgan solo, as opposed to what
but Smashing Pumpkins for a long time has just been him,
but what hopefully with the name change it might actually take some of the pressure off, or like he's been second guessing himself with the Smashing Pumpkins name for a while now, where he's like, well, this is what they should sound like, that brand should sound like. As for the song itself, it's quite a nice song. Now, like, there's this weird thing where I almost prefer when he's singing with that kind of like wild, like caterwauling thing.
Yeah, yeah.
When he's actually a bit measured and trying to sing, I can finally recognize how some people can't stand his voice.
Sure, yeah.
It's very there in the middle, and something with the piano, it's a bit off-putting, which surprises me because I'm usually a fan of his voice. But the song itself, the refrain is nice. It's grand, yeah. It'd be interesting to see what the album's like.
It's nice, but I found it quite unmemorable. It's just basic enough.
It's not moving mountains, yeah.
No, it's not. So, you know. Best of luck, WPC, or whatever you want to be known as. So, listener, I've got a challenge for you now. I want you to guess who this is. Okay, if you said Imagine Dragons, I think you'd have a case, but it isn't. It's 30 Seconds to Mars and Walk on Water. So yeah, they're back.
Yeah, Dave, I thought you said we're not allowed to have protest songs on. What a one you picked.
What do you mean, mate?
Okay, right. I said like 30 seconds into the Foo Fighters song, I was laughing. The laughter continued because this was the next track up.
Yeah.
And I just... This is the worst dross I've ever heard in my entire life.
I'm glad you still got a giggle, because I was going to say this was my comedy track of the week. Like,
the lyrics are... Oh, my God.
No, it's when that choir comes in, man. Yeah. I lost it.
Yeah.
Not since the great Kali stormed out at the end of the Punjabi prison match have I laughed so hard recently.
I don't know much 30 Seconds to Mars. Like,
no, I can't say
kind of like
familiar.
Kind of leaning a bit on emo and punk, but actually quite mainstream. Like, what is this? That's definitely a departure.
Is
for
this
them,
what
right?
they do?
I mean, like, don't look at me like I'm the fucking hardcore Jared Leto fan.
Anyone will know.
Okay, look, 30 Seconds to Mars have the odd okay track.
Oh.
No, they're a terrible band. Okay. Sorry. I have to take this moment to. We've mentioned before on the podcast Some Kind of Monster, Metallica documentary, a tremendous watch from every point of view. If you want something on a similar vein but an hour shorter, Artifact. A film about 30 Seconds to Mars being sued by their record label for $30 million is well worth your hour and 40 minutes if you want to see just how much of a psychopath Jared Leto really is. And it's a really frustrating documentary because, like, it's interspersed with him being a complete prick who has no idea how to wear scarves properly, by the way. And that will really bother you as the film goes along. Okay. You're desperate for, like, an incredible situation to come along where you just get sucked into a turbine or something, which doesn't happen. Alas, also in the film is you have, like, music professionals and musicians talking about the music industry, very frankly, to camera. That's genuinely fascinating and interesting. You do learn a lot, but it's interspersed so often with Jared Leto being a complete fucking prick. His ego is the size of the fucking sun. And with this, I mean, look, I'm just going to read from the fucking press release I got a couple weeks ago. So here we go. Jared Leto says, after four long years, hundreds of days, thousands of hours, gazillions of seconds, we have finally managed to finish a single fucking song. Whoever thought soon would actually be here now. With the help of groundbreaking nanotechnology, chatbots, and self-driving music software, we have wrangled from the depths of our coal black hearts some semblance of a song. If you're still reading this press release and managed to get this far, you'd probably get to work or school before you get fired or grounded. If you're stubborn, like I am, please continue and let me share with you a few words on our brand new single, the ever so subtle and minimalist ode we tenderly call Walk on Water. Of course, this entire paragraph is complete and total hogwash, but I'm not sure exactly what to say about the song. Honestly, we miss you all. We can't wait to get back on the road, and we couldn't be more proud to share with you the first single off our new album. And yes, we have been working on it for 4 years. The last time we put an album out, there were no self-driving cars, no fidget spinners, President Trump was still that guy on The Apprentice, and Jon Snow hadn't even died yet. Hashtag spoiler alert.
Throwing in spoilers.
And after all that, it's shit.
It's really bad.
In fairness, he is correct. Like, at its best, it is some semblance of a song.
They put it out on Facebook a week ago. They put out this thing where it was like, here's a minute long video of 30 Seconds to Mars fans, although they weren't described that way, but they must have been being taken to a location and they had headphones on and it was their physical reaction to the song.
Oh shit, yeah.
And I was like, well, this is sensational. And there's also a bit in that where Jared Leto walks out of like a trailer or something and he's wearing like what appears to be like a fencing mask and a pink bath towel or bathrobe.
Right.
And he looks exactly like if they were doing another Hannibal revival and he was playing fucking Francis Dollarhide, because it's terrifying.
Imagine being in a band with him and having to put up with all the nonsense. Oh, just being like, this is paying my mortgage, you know?
Yeah.
another thing to careful what you Google, because you'll find some horrendous stories about that man. He should probably be in jail. But yeah, that's all I'll say. Terrible song.
Allegedly. Yeah.
And one more thing to avoid. The video to the track has just been released featuring little bits of footage from what is going to be a full-length documentary directed by Jared Leto called A Day in the Life of America, which is based entirely on fan shot and crew shot footage across the country on July 4th.
It's heartfelt in the same way as like Kings of Leon's trip to Africa, isn't it?
Where they're kicking ball. Yeah. Just a note there. So it's directed by Jared Leto.
Yeah.
It says directed by Jared Leto.
Yeah.
Because at the end of Artifact, after you suffer through that hour and 40 minutes, which by the way, I did for Headstuff. If you go to headstuff.org and just type in 30 Seconds to Mars, you can read by minute commentary that I wrote for that film when I was absolutely high as a kite on a really bad flu a couple of years ago.
Right.
I don't regret it. It was important work. Now, at the end of that film, it comes up and it says, directed by Bartholomew Cubbins. And I went, that's a strange name. I wonder what he's done.
It's Jared Leto.
It's Jared Leto.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, apparently he's gonna wear this one.
Okay, well, fantastic. We have one song left. And it's a return of Northern Irish bruising mathcore sensation, And So I Watched From Afar. Now, And So I Watched From Afar have been around for quite some time. They have returned. There is a new album on the way. There is a tour they'll be stopping off here at the end of the year. The song is called A Slow Unfolding of Wings. It's very much business as usual, but are we happy to hear that business?
No, I am, absolutely. Yeah, I like the band a lot. This does not waste time, does it? It's just straight in there.
Yeah.
You know, and for a band that can obviously occasionally sort of play around with the instrumentation to kind of leave the core a little more elusive.
Yeah.
No, it's right there and it's kind of charged, and I do like the fact that by the end, yeah, it feels like it's almost kind of been chipping away at something and it's finally found a crack of light, something like that.
Yeah.
There's just the sense that the repetition actually really helps it. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. The album's out October 20th, apparently. The Endless Shimmering is what it's called. And yeah, I am glad to see these boys back in the block.
Yeah, they never really disappoint. And I was just like so relieved to hear this song at the end of the Songs of the Week. Just like, okay, fine. Yeah. It's something I can enjoy. They've talked about this being really like they're laying it all out. I think they recorded the entire album something like 9 days. They were just like holed up and just went hell for leather. And it sounds like that. I'd call them, as you say, I mean, there's no kind of like faffing about. It's pure energy. Which is saying something for a band that is, you know, usually can draw on that, but they sound as kind of ferocious as ever. Well, you know, drawing on some of the kind of positive stuff and the kind of more, the warmer textures of their last couple of records. Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Big fan of this. Yeah, I mean, like certain bands like this, there is a wheelhouse and they have to stick to it. They have come out of the comfort zone before. Like, I mean, the last record, Airs, was kind of brought in vocals and kind of like mixed up a little bit, I thought, to Diminishing Returns, but by no means a failure. But they're kind of back to what they do best. And again, as Cullum says, very kind of streamlined, very kind of, you know, there's absolutely not a peck of fat on this at all. And very, very good to have them back. I'm very much looking forward to seeing them live once again, because if you've never been to see them live, make it your mission. They're great. Great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so two albums for review this week. Ooh. Because I crowbarred one in on top of another, Eleanor Rigby Grave style. Let's start with the first one, a surprise release, one that made me very excited altogether when we were in the pub last week. I wanted to just run home and listen, but I stayed out for pints because, you know, priorities. This is brand new from their apparently final ever record, Science Fiction. The song is called 451. So that's brand new. It's 451. It was supposed to come out possibly at the end of the year, but it came out completely randomly, it seems, out of nowhere last Thursday. Mm-hmm. So we had a week to kind of spend with this record. Now, you know, this is kind of my shout because I kind of grew up with brand new in many ways. So rather than me leading the charge here, I kind of want to find out what you guys think because I don't really know. So take it away, boys.
I quite enjoyed it, I must say. I, like, straight from the start, I was a little bit iffy about the whole kind of found tapes thing, especially because, you know, it really doesn't take long in this record for you to be like, okay, now I get what they're talking about here. It was kind of an unnecessary device at one level. And even though, yeah, like I say, I enjoyed the record, I felt that there was more just unnecessary little crutches being used along the way, the over-reliance on acoustic guitar being one of them, where, you know, for a band that clearly has a broad palette, it felt like kind of almost a trick that it was going back to kind of bring the same kind of sense and same aesthetic throughout the record. Mm. I think that was especially apparent on a song like Desert, which, you know, lyrically is frighteningly bang on for right now, which is written from the point of like a homophobic, gun-toting, freedom-loving dude, you know. But again, because it's written from that point of view, like, surely it can take on a slightly different sonic structure if it wants. And the fact that they didn't bother doing that, maybe just a little bit disappointing. Missed opportunity, I suppose.
As a band kind of often cited as a major influence on Lil Peep, they had to do a lot to kind of win me back in terms of my affections. Now, I thought this, like, if they're definitely retiring and not just, you know, LCD Sound System retiring, and they seem set on it.
This sounds,
I mean,
like,
we've been talking about this
retirement
for 2 years, more or less. I mean, we've been saying 2018, so.
The interesting thing about brand new is their relationship with their fans. Well, yeah, one of the interesting things about them is relationship with their fans, and as much as fans of this band have been preparing for this final breakup for a very long time.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of made their peace with it. So, I mean, okay. I mean, like, to give some background, despite skipping the background, brand new have been around kind of like, you know, that kind of early 2000s emo period. I mean, yeah, they kind of come out and they're kind of lumped in with the likes of Taken Back Sunday, who they actually were friends with and had a hilarious falling out with, and which led to a lot of ridiculous feuding.
It was beef, wasn't there?
Serious
the lyrics
beef
and everything.
Oh,
yeah,
man. Like, yeah, they allege that they stole lyrics from each other. Yeah. And Jesse Lacey, the singer from brand new, was friends with Adam Lazara from Taken Back Sunday. And there was all this kind of stuff where, like, you know, I think Brand New released a really cringy t-shirt saying microphones are for singing, not swinging, because Adam Lazar is onstage histrionic. So this is the thing. But like, if you look at Brand New as a band, I mean, like, it's interesting because I feel like with this band, they have a very distinct beginning, middle, and end here across their five records. They have this kind of getting older and reflecting it in the music. The first record, your favorite weapon, is kind of cookie cutter emo. Now, there's some great songs on there, but it's very kind of, you know, straightforward, you know, kind of fast guitar riffs, fast drumming, angsty vocal, kind of high pitched vocals, tracks like, you know, Jude Law and A Semester Abroad, which have, like, you know, lyrics like, you know, tell all the English boys you meet about the American boy back in the States, the American boy you used to date, who would do anything you say, that kind of stuff. So it's very, like, of that style, and, you know, didn't really go beyond that. I mean, it's a fun record, but it's also very, it's almost borderline juvenile, you know, like, in terms of where it's at, where it's kind of teenage, post-teenage hard is at. Yep. Then you get a record like Deja Entendu, which is a lot more kind of upfront about, you know, kind of adulthood and kind of sex and all that kind of stuff. And even the band's burgeoning fame, which they weren't terribly comfortable with, and they kind of reflect in some of their songs. It's got some amazing songs on there, though, like Play Crack the Sky, which is just a wonderful piece of work. You move on to The Devil and God Are Raging Inside Me in 2006, and this is their seminal work. This is, like, why people love this band. Like, go beyond just liking them to actually loving them and, like, genuinely fucking tattoo them on their flesh type thing. It's a wonderful record. I think it's a perfect record. Like, it's in my own personal top five. Beautiful songwriting, incredibly abrasive and aggressive. It captures that raw angst that Jesse Lacey has and mixes it so well. Then you get Daisy in 2009, which fans don't quite love, but it is a good album, and Now This. So essentially, they have been one of the few bands out there, especially given their kind of genre and that kind of style, to just kind of be mysterious. They've managed to remain very aloof. They don't do a lot of interviews. They play by their own rules. Mm. They don't kind of showcase, even at their own gigs. Like, I mean, like, you go there, and a lot of this is kind of like, fans have, I think, have enjoyed the relationship. They've enjoyed deciphering who the band are. Jesse Lacey makes no kind of compunctions about his love for Morrissey. Like, one of the early Brand New tracks, a song called Mixtape, and it's addressed to presumably an ex-girlfriend, and he's got, like, a line where he's like, you know, like, the way you don't appreciate the Smiths or Morrissey. You go to his gigs and he has Garland of Flowers in, like, his fucking microphone stand. And obviously, Jesse Lacey, as a lyricist and as a singer as well, clearly showcases quite a lot of inner emotional turmoil, a lot of angst, and sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it really fucking isn't. And that's kind of another reason why people gravitate towards this band. But, like, to wrap up my point, what I would say is, speaking myself as someone who's in his early 30s, that's early 30s, I reflect with where this band are at now and where they were at then, and I think an awful lot of their fans are the same. They're playing Dublin in November, and I'm seeing an awful lot of people who don't even go to gigs anymore be like, well, I gotta go to that one, because there's a sense here that this is the last piece of the puzzle, and it's the last piece of the puzzle on an emotional level for an awful lot of people, and a lot of it is like letting go. Now, what I would also say on that point before I wrap up here is this: while I'm delighted to have this record, it's a challenging listen. And I've actually gone on, like, a few long walks while listening to it, you know, headphones on, kind of, you know, the dying sun of the day and all that kind of stuff. Now, what I would say is this.
That's track seven.
There's an element here of your ex-girlfriend who you're not over popping up with a random message out of the blue. And you're, like, so excited, and you get that rush of pure adrenaline and just utter kind of, like, just no logic. You just run with it. But you're going to get fucking hurt. And you do.
Oh,
that's where I'm at.
Well, yeah, like, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you start talking about the relationship they have with the fan base. And while I was actually pleasantly surprised at how, I mean, this is, I found this very listenable.
Yeah, I found it quite accessible as well.
Yeah, but it does have that bang of, like, I felt like, even though I was enjoying it, and as someone that doesn't like that, you know, brand of, you know, American whinging, I think they're the best possibly proponents of it, because they've great taste and they've great restraint, so it never goes too far into those tropes that I just hate, those emo type things. It might influence that stuff, but they're far better than that kind of genre. But as much as I was kind of enjoying it, I was thinking, oh god, I'd really be loving this if I was a massive fan. And if it's like when you're kind of like in a pub and you see old friends reunited and they're like sharing old stories, and you're kind of like, oh, I can appreciate that, but I'm like, it's not really for me, or this isn't kind of, I mean, there's even callbacks to like the first album on the closer, Batter Up, which is kind of like emblematic of the album for me, in that it's kind of building to something that never quite comes for me. Like, it's a very nice thing, but it doesn't quite explode. There's explosive moments. I like that they temper those kind of just guitar splurges, and there's some great tracks, but a lot of it was like, oh, I'm sure if you were in love with this band as a teen, this would be doing a lot more for you than it's doing for me.
Yeah, and I think it's also kind of funny when I say, you know, earlier that, like, you know, it felt as though, like, maybe they'd limited their palette a little bit, that they'd kind of constrained themselves to a certain sort of aesthetic approach, that obviously, like, there's not going to be another album here. There's not going to be a comparative work, you know, in a couple of years' time, anywhere down the line, in fact, where you can kind of see this fit in that context. So, like Dave said, you kind of have to see it as a five-album mark going back about 15 years or so. And one of the things that struck me on this record was, like, just a sense of malaise. I mean, like, I think it's even the second track where he's talking about, like, strumming with a heavy hand and I hope you're one of the kids that got cured, where basically he's kind of saying, look, my work is done here. Like, I'm not doing this shit for you anymore.
But wrapped up in what I think is a great song. So you're kind of like,
And it's the same with, like, Same Logic, Teeth, a couple of tracks later. Like, when they actually forge a weapon out of that sort of resignation, so to speak, that, you know, this is it, we're done. I think that's probably when the album peaks for me.
Yeah, I mean, Can't Get It Out, the track you mentioned there, it has lines like, you know, I guess that's just depression, and he kind of essentially says, you know, sometimes you let it win, and that's absolutely true from my experience. And it's like, when with regards to he's got a line where he says, I've got a positive message, sometimes I just can't get it out. And if you know Jesse Lacey, you know that that line is very self-aware and very kind of, you know, self-deprecating as well. It's kind of a meta little gag. And yeah, the interesting thing about this album is, I mean, I agree with Craig. There's a definite sense here of, is resignation the right word? I'm not sure. There's a definite sense here of, like, this is a full stop and we're done. We are done now.
I felt like it was almost an acceptance of
things
can be shitty, but, like, do you know what? I've got a family now and I'm moving into a mature place.
It's someone else's turn.
Yeah, I can kind of let it go a bit. Yeah,
definitely. And I mean, like, with that, like I say, it comes, its own kind of pain comes with that, where it's like, this isn't a, you know, wrap it up with a needle bow happy ending. This is like, life is hard. And it's still hard, and it's going to be hard, but, like, we've had our run, and we've done well, and we've given you a lot, and now it's time for us to go.
Like, we've discussed album closers on this show in the past. Is this kind of a feature-length album closer?
That's a good point. I mean, like, to me, it's like, you know, I'd go even further and be like, this album is the five stages of grief, you know, like, from start to finish. It kind of is. But it is. No, I think you're dead right. It is a feature-length album closer. It also has a ton of callbacks. Like, a ton of callbacks to practically every record, if not all of them. And again, it's a companion piece for, like, fans to grieve. And I mean, like, you know, that gig that's coming up in November, I know that that night is going to be so cathartic in that building. And I've seen them live a few times, but this is going to be different. And this is going to be, you know, I'm sure some tears will be shed, but there's a definite thing here of, like, fans are getting their chance, like, to say goodbye. Like, they know that this is how it is, and everyone's accepting of it. No one's being like, no, let's have a fifth or sixth album. Like, you know, everyone's like, cool, you didn't have to give us this, we didn't think you would. And I mean, as a work,
I don't want to go to this gig out of interest anymore, because it's just going to be like standing at the side of the Pope's funeral or something.
Yeah. It's going to be fucking phenomenal.
Can't believe they went with an open coffin.
But, like, the album has got, like Craig said, you know, like, if I was a fan of this band as a teenager, I'd presumably love this. And I do love this record, and I love that it exists, and I spent a week with it. And I've gotten past the initial kind of, like, you know, oh my God, my buddy Valentine just put out their first record in 22 years. Maybe it's better than Loveless. And it's like, oh, actually, no, hang on, it really isn't. I was like, is this as good as Devil and God? It's not. Is this, like, their second best record? It might not be. It's definitely disjointed. It's got some kind of stylistic choices that I wouldn't have gone with. There is a sense of heaviness. It can be a bit of a challenge. You get it to a certain point and you're kind of like, okay, there's still a lot more road to walk here. But then at the same time, it kind of suckers you in and kind of, you know, beds you down in a weird way. And, like, by the end of it, you're like, oh, okay, we're at the ending now. And I guess that's kind of part of the point that it's making. Like, I mean, it's not meant to be clean. It's not meant to be pretty. It's not meant to be polished. It's meant to be a long goodbye. Yeah. And I think, as from that point of view, it absolutely works. And I think it's an incredible way to say goodbye, because Daisy, the preceding record, which again I think is underrated and maybe a bit not loved as much as it should be, that was definitely not a goodbye. You couldn't finish a career on this one, and this is a full stop with a fucking exclamation point. And yeah, I'm it's an 8 out of 10 for me. You know, this is truly an end of an era for fans like myself.
I'd probably, like, verging on an 8, I'd probably go 7.5. There was a couple of songs, I mean, lyrically sometimes he can be amazing, and then a song like Desert, which is the one where he kind of takes on the characteristics of an alt-right guy.
That's Desert.
Yeah, which didn't quite work for me. It was a bit like, oh, look, I'm this character that's a bit shitty.
Like I say, if it had been marked out with some sort of departure from the rest of the album's you know, mood and take and sound, then it might have been okay. Instead, it kind of sounded weirdly like they just drafted in a guest vocalist without switching anything up.
There was like, Could Never Be Heaven, there was some kind of bit clunky. I was like, oh, is this really on the album? So that just brought it down. But actually, more enjoyable than you would think from Dave's review, I would say, because tonally, like, their guitars sound gorgeous. It's a gorgeous sounding.
Oh, it's
like,
beautifully
recorded.
Produced.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
enjoy listening to it.
They're longtime producer, like, their kind of fifth member. Like, I mean, like, this, like, he got up close to those drums.
Yeah, it sounds great.
It's got a live room sound. The guitar has always been gorgeous with this band. Jesse Lacey's vocal sound, fucking perfect.
Yeah,
for what they are doing. Yeah, like, this is, it's lovingly put together. Yeah.
I'd recommend checking it out. Like, verging on an A for me.
Yeah. It's a 7 for me. Yeah. Decent album. Like I say, I felt it was a little too married to its sort of choices. Some parts of it sounded a little forced, a little strained in that regard, but still worth a listen.
Well, you know, if you want to go and read the Vice piece about it, which is called Brand New Science Fiction and the Terminal Dread of Being Alive.
Oh, fuck.
It's actually a very good piece.
For the terminal dread of reading that, I'm just going to move straight on to our next album.
Let's cheer ourselves
Grizzly
up.
Grizzly Bear are back. Those noted party merchants. And it's called Painted Ruins, the LP, and this is what it sounds like.
Yeah, that was Morning Sound, Morning with a U, to keep up the cheery vibes. It's the second track off their fifth album, and I love this album already.
Yeah. I really like it. I mean, we've discussed Grizzly Bear before, and you're a big fan, I know, Craig.
Mm.
So have we discussed Chris Bear before, by the way? Because this is one of my favourite little pieces of trivia.
He's the drummer.
Yeah, but he wasn't part of the project originally.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, how fucking mental is it that they went out and found a drummer for a project called Grizzly Bear?
I think it was just Ed.
Name...
It was like a solo thing for the first album, yeah.
But yeah, but it's been like, Alan Parsons trying to get session musicians and finding Jim Project to come in on the drums. Like,
Cullum did a wave.
That was me in character as Jim Project.
Well, yeah, we're 5 years on from their last record, Shields, which at the time I said was kind of something of a masterpiece in terms of what they were doing, which was for the first time they got properly like democratic. So as I said, it did start as an Ed Roast kind of solo thing, and then he brought on the band. It was more of a band effort than ever before, and it really worked. It was like a kind of really good kind of example of their very intricate playing and compositional excellence. Kind of shot through with folk poppy things and always with hooks and always with a bit of humanity. It didn't feel like this is just mathematics or this is just showing off. And to me, this is a continuation of that. It's a bit darker. It's a bit more kind of like, there's a bit of terror there. Like the band have been talking about America and how it feels toxic at the moment. And that seeps into all the tracks, I think. It's a darker place they're in, but still very enjoyable.
Yeah, I think some of the kind of counter rhythms halfway through songs almost sound like something chasing you or sound like a sense of pursuit.
Yeah, very much
something like that. Yeah, I really like this. I mean, you know, at one level they are, you know, slightly impenetrable. I mean, you know, not as much as some people, sure, but you know, it's not easy to get your head around first listen.
Yeah.
What I do really appreciate and really like about this band is that I think they're fully aware of that, and so it's built in a way that like it's going to reward you every time.
Yeah,
and that even if you need kind of 5 or 6 runs at a song to kind of figure it out lyrically, it's not like, you know, those things where, like, you know, you listen to a song 5 or 6 times to try to figure it out, and by the end of it, the melody has just turned to elevator muzak in your head because you've just heard it over and over again.
Yeah, it creeps up in your
That doesn't happen with this because there's so much to unpack and so much to kind of unfurl.
Yeah.
It's almost like things are just like overlying strands that, you know, like you have to kind of pick at one and follow where it goes. This is another great record from a band that I think are vastly underrated, to be honest.
To call back to the brand new record for just a second, and that Vice piece, by the way, written by Emma Garland, by the way, it's a really good piece. She makes a point in it, talking about that last track on that record, Batter Up, and she says, depending on what mood you're in, you know, this track could either be an inspirational mantra for you, or it could be something that you, like a crutch or that you fall down on rather than hoist yourself up with, depending on what mood you're in. And I found with the Grizzly Bear record,
impale yourself, like
I fucked up the metaphor. Okay, can we just so essentially, I found a similar kind of road here, in as much as I think this is a gorgeous record. I think it's elegiac in the extreme, and that's a good thing. I did find it impenetrable on occasion. I did find it meandering on occasion. I did find it almost too complex for its own good and layered on occasion. But at the same time, there's so much here to admire and enjoy. But like, I got in a little bit of trouble for saying this to someone today. And I kind of said, like, you know, this is a record that I think you would put on if you want to go to sleep to. And that's not me slagging it off or anything. It's not me being negative whatsoever. I find it to be quite a, you know, you get lost in it. Like, you know, it's labyrinthine.
Yeah.
And I found it hard to just tap into it. I found it hard to just kind of like, just be like, now listen to one track
I was about to say, yeah, it's not an album that you're going to easily drop in and out of.
It's kind of an aural mosaic, if you'll allow me to be. Yeah.
Like, once it's working for you and you're like in that zone, you do tumble down a bit of a rabbit hole with it. Like, and you're along for the ride, I think. Yeah, that's a good way of describing it.
Like, I agree with what Cullen said.
At the same time, if you put this on before you go to sleep, I don't think it's going to be your most restful night.
Well, I very rarely have those restful nights.
Maybe if you stop putting albums like this on to go to sleep,
I usually listen
to
podcasts
better
before I go to sleep. But I mean, like, okay, so essentially, like, I didn't find it samey per se, but I do think that it's cut from a very similar cloth as you go. But it's kind of like, I don't know, like, for lack of a better comparison, because they obviously sound sonically nothing alike, it's kind of like a Phil Puttons record, in as much as you're like, it's just this relentless thread that they're stretching and entwining and like wrapping it as far as they can go, which is, to be, again, hugely admired. But I found it hard to connect to this album. I just found it hard to let go and actually kind of let it envelop me. Now, Craig, I know you mentioned Shields, and I'm pretty sure when you wrote your review for Hot Press, I think you gave it one of your coveted 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I very much did, yeah.
Almost a perfect record for you.
Almost. There are no perfect records, of course.
That's true. Yeah. On first listen, for sure, that nothing should be getting 5 stars or 10 out of 10. But essentially, yeah, I mean, like, no, this is beautiful work. It really is. And as Cullen says, it's one of the great records of the year. It is. But I can't say that I loved it. I mean, I enjoyed it, sure, but like, I just, something about this, there was like a wall of sound, and I found myself on the other side of the wall.
And that's fair. I mean, they can be very inscrutable, but I think, like, you talked about that thread being stretched out. They do switch it up like a fair bit, I think. I mean, I remember talking to Daniel from the band around the time of Shields, and he was talking about how they've always tried to have like pop moments, like the likes of Yet Again, and also find the space in the music. He talked about the band Talk Talk and how, I mean, throughout their career, they got more and more sparse. Now, Grizzly Bear going the other way, I think. Mm-hmm. But they're still trying to find those dynamics where you'll get something like the first four tracks, the Three Rings, almost feels like a closer to a certain chapter of it. And Losing All Sense comes in with these stabby Beatles guitars and a gorgeous refrain, and you're off somewhere else. So I think they're always finding these pockets of kind of light and shade that
Neighbors
you can just...
Neighbours has a kind of good sense of momentum to it as well, I thought.
Yeah, so there are switches up there. But I totally see your point, Dave, in terms of, if it's not quite hitting you on a like an emotional level, I can see why that would.
It never did. I mean, like, there are moments of absolute splendor here. There's some shimmering like moments that are just incredible, like lovely individual twists and turns. But I never found myself feeling the narrative, if there is one. His words didn't do much for me apart from be like a pretty picture. It's a very, very pretty picture, but I don't think there's much behind the eyes here. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I must say I disagree. I tend to kind of find substance in what they do, and unlike some other bands where I do feel exactly like you, Animal Collective would be one perhaps that kind of share certain roots with an act like this, and you kind of say, yeah, look, keep it on listening to this, like banging your head against a wall trying to make a connection. Whereas no, I think Grizzly Bear will reward that effort and will reward those repeated listens. For me, it's an 8. I really enjoy this record.
Yeah, I might go 8.5.
I'm going your classic 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10.
No, it's really fucking good. It really is. Check it out for sure. But I just didn't, I didn't get there much. And to be fair, a lot of it could simply be the fact that the brand new album was incredibly distracting.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, to be honest, I mean, I'll put all my cards on the table here and say that over the weekend I barely even got to it. And like, very much by the time I got to it, like on Monday, I was kind of like, oh, I have to listen to this Grizzly Bear record. So it, like, through no fault of them, it has come out at a very inopportune time for me. So I look forward to revisiting it when I kind of actually get the chance to properly bed down with it. Like, it's great. No, it is. It's a really good record. I just wish I liked it more.
But they are a band, they said it themselves, like, you kind of almost have to assimilate the music. So as Cullum says, like, just where it's like popping into your head or whatever, get to that point and then come back to us, Dave.
I will. But in the meantime, I've been listening to some good old-fashioned hardcore, because Cullum and I mentioned that we watched wrestling together at the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the night before the wrestling, there was the kind of first division, I suppose, of WWE, also known as NXT, which is always a better card because it's shorter and they actually have better
things on it.
But they also had some live bands playing this time, and there was one band called Code Orange that were playing, and I saw a pitchfork on Twitter be like, Code Orange played last night at WWE's NXT, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, why the fuck are Pitchfork talking about wrestling? They've never done this. So I went along, and it turns out they're fans of this band, Code Orange. They reviewed their record from earlier this year called Forever and gave it like a big 7.4, which of course, as we said before, for Pitchfork is quite a high rating. Mm-hmm. So I was like, interesting, very interesting. And I went onto Spotify and checked it out. I like my hardcore here and there. And it's good. Like, you know, it's not going to change the world. It's certainly not on the Converge level. Incidentally, shout out to a friend of the show, Dave Higgins, who went to Austria this week and saw Converge in a tiny fucking club and was sending me photographs from it. I'm very upset. But Code Orange, if you're in the mood for a hardcore blast in the arm, check out Forever. It's definitely a lot of fun. Also enjoyable and kind of, again, challenging in its own way, the Alice Glass EP dropped, because we were talking last week about it and we were like, I wonder when she'll put out more music. Turns out she put out 6 tracks, self-titled, last Friday, another surprise release. And it runs the gamut from what we heard on the track Without Love and this kind of like, you know, newfound pop kind of almost mastery really to the glitchy kind of percussive stuff that you would expect. There's a track on there that is just annoying to listen to. There's a brilliant closer. It's a mixed bag, but it's good.
I think, yeah, I gave it one listen earlier in the week and I kind of agree with you there. We said last week that this was obviously her sort of moving away from what she'd done before with Crystal Castle and kind of trying to find her own feet. So I suppose it makes sense that she's kind of experimenting in that regard. Other things I've heard, just today, actually, Beck dropped a single.
Oh, yeah.
And it was funny that, like, through the songs of the week, you were referencing kind of like, you know, 70s McCartney and 70s Lennon. Well, this is just before that. This is late, like, psychedelia Beatles sort of stuff. Like,
yeah.
It's like his take on Father John Misty, but a lot more retro inspired.
Yeah, maybe a kind of ELO-y vibe as well, which is just a Beatles vibe, really.
Speaking of Father John Misty, see your boy Ryan Adams again, Craig.
He called them the most self-important, he called Father John Misty the most self-important asshole in the world, but then apologised. Did you not see the apology?
So it's all okay.
He took it all back and
it's almost said like
that
Ryan Adams has a you know, tweeting without thinking problem.
Yeah. No, surely not.
There was also a Father John Misty response.
Well, also Ryan Adams was threatening to buy one of Craig's novelty suits last week. So
I'm now selling novelty suits, apparently. Father John Misty's response was just a video of him just going like shouting to someone, being like, "Hey, Ryan Adams thinks I'm the most important asshole in the world."
Nice.
It's very good.
And yeah, and in terms of other things to listen to next week, I mean, who would I be kidding if I said otherwise? Probably going to be spinning the Taylor Swift single quite a bit.
Oh yeah,
that's right. How about that artwork, eh?
Hey.
Yeah.
Very good.
Go to our Twitter account to see Cullum's wonderful interpretation of said artwork. Craig, what have you been listening to?
I've been listening to The Velvet Underground.
Oh!
Where are they from?
Well, do you know why, actually? Because Pitchfork finally caved and did their, like, albums of the 60s list. Which they said like 5 years ago, we'll never do it because albums weren't a big thing in the 60s. And now they're kind of fully on board with it.
And then some Condé Nast executive was like, I want it.
Yeah, and number one was Velvet Underground and Nico, which is a wonderful record. With a wonderful cover, that banana.
Indeed, yeah.
Bit of Warhol for you.
Fair enough. Reminder once again that if you enjoyed this show, come to see us live with also great special guests Overhead the Albatross, Dahi and Elaine May. Whelan, September the 28th is part of the Dublin Podcast Festival. Tickets are €12. They're on Ticketmaster right
now. And they will be posted to you soon as well, because I just got delivery of tickets to my apartment.
To clarify, Cullum didn't buy a ticket for his own show. His girlfriend did.
Yeah. So she ain't getting on that guest
no
list.
No guest list for you, love. Okay, play us out this week. As always, we will have Irish music. We featured this act on the show before, Keith Mannion, aka Slow Place Like Home. He's back with a new single, it's called Echoes. What makes this special, you might wonder? Well, I'll tell you, listener. Fergal McKee of Whipping Boy fame. If you've never heard Whipping Boy before, well worth checking out.
Definitely.
Well worth checking out, band of yore. He has lent his vocals to this kind of spectrally synthy-based track, and I gotta say, he sounds good. He sounds like he's kind of back amongst it, and maybe he is. I'm not saying Whipping Boy are going to make a comeback or nothing, but who knows? Maybe it starts here, and it starts on No Encore, and it starts right now. My name is Dave Hannery. This has been No Encore. There will be No Encore. See you all next week. Bye 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 bye. You recall the ride.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Been thinking about McDonald's all day. Can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.